everyone, and welcome to Myth in the Mojave, 30 minutes of storytelling and conversation about mythology and why it's important to our lives today. I'm your personal mythologist, Catherine Svela. Wherever you may be in this wide, beautiful, crazy world of ours, you are part of this story circle. A very, very long time ago, there was a traveler, and he was making a journey through a very wild and desolate country when he suddenly heard the roar of a tiger. Terrified, he turned around and saw the animal was charging towards him, and so he took off running. He ran for his life across the barren land, and he didn't see any refuge, no home, no tree, no wall, until a dried-up well appeared in the distance. He ran as fast as he could to the edge of the well, gripped the edge, and leapt inside. As he began to fall to the bottom of the well, he noticed, to his horror, that there was a fire-snorting dragon far below, snapping its vicious jaws, and desperately he reached out and grabbed a hold of a long vine that was growing out of the bricks in the well. Miraculously, the vine held him, and for a few precious seconds, he clung for his life against the cold brick walls of the well, and what a predicament he was in. Above him, the tiger was circling the well and gnashing its teeth, and below him, the dragon was licking its chops, and his arms started to get tired. His mind raced around, his thoughts knotted. Fate was very near. Still, he held on to the vine. And while he was pondering his dilemma, he noticed two mice, one black and one white, nibbling at the branch to which he was clinging. And this sight put him into a rapture. Suddenly, every molecule of the bark of that vine glowed as if it were on fire. And then he noticed a few drops of luscious, sweet honey glistening on the leaves at the root of the vine. Smiling, he stretched out his tongue and tasted the honey. That is an adaptation of an old Eastern parable that I found in a collection titled From the Soul of Flame, edited by Phil Cosino. Now, I don't know about you, but lately I often feel like that man, stuck between two disastrous outcomes. And when I came across that story, I was really struck by the resolution of being fully present in the discovery of something sweet. Something sweet. In that presence, everything changed. The nature of the disaster, everything changed. And I've realized recently that a lot of the weight that I feel in our current cultural debate, struggle, debacle, is this weight of inevitability. We seem to have a collective habit of forecasting, of predicting the future. And sometimes it's almost like a game, moving chess pieces around and saying, oh, this will happen, and then if that happens, this will happen, and if this happens, that happens. It's like a game divorced from real life. Or it's dire. It's totally negative. It's all about doomsday. And I think that those of us in the Christian West are schooled in this way of thinking. We are conditioned to see time as linear, and not only that, but to see time and culture, civilization, humanity hurtling towards Armageddon. Armageddon, or the rapture, of course, depending which side you're on. Because what's truly terrible about this vision of the future is that it's one of winners and losers, the saved and the damned, and the rejection of this beautiful home we call Earth, which is merely collateral damage on the way to salvation and perfect happiness in a place called heaven, somewhere out there. This view, of course, is coming from a myth. And myths matter. They matter because they contain truth, but they're not absolute. They are collective, powerful fictions. And we learn from them. We can learn from this conditioning, in other words. We can learn from our myths when we remember that they are myths. Not because we dismiss them, which is the mistake that Western culture has been making for a couple of centuries, but because when we understand myths as myths, they tell us about ourselves. They tell us about our hopes and fears. We can use them as a way to see, and we can see through them. There are other mythologies besides the Christian mythology that include an end of time, end of a world, end of this world, end of a cycle. And this need for endings or mythologies of endings contains a longing for a better world, for a world that is more peaceful or beautiful or easier. It contains a longing for renewal, for the refreshment of something that has gotten old, outworn, degraded. And there's a recognition there that the old is the material for the new. Destruction is necessary for creation. I think it's important to understand these longings and to see ourselves in this position. If we understand that, then we know that our participation matters, and also that we are in something larger. Something is happening to us. I have often shared this statement by the Hopi elders, and I've got to refer to that again. It has become a real touchstone. They use the image of a river flowing fast. They say, know that the river, that is the thing that we're in, what is moving, time, events, what we call history, know that the river has its destination. There is an arc to this thing that we call history. Swim out into the middle, they say. Keep your head above water. Don't cling to the banks. In other words, enter the current and be present. I don't hear a guarantee about outcomes there, but I do hear a caution against predictions of the future. It's important now that we know what we don't know and that we stay here, immersed in what is. Going back to the Hopi elders, they say, celebrate. Can you believe that? Celebrate, they say. Banish the word struggle from your vocabulary and attitude. All that we do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. Taste the honey in this moment. I feel a lot of outrage. I know many of you do, and that is a very valuable spark for action. It is also the voice of conscience, and important that we take our outrage up as a challenge to our own selves to closely examine how it is that we show up. And I think it's important that we not overlook another potent tool and resource as we swim into the middle of the river. Celebrate and do what we do in a sacred manner, and that is joy. Joy, awareness, being present, in presence. It's another way to invite what is coming. How do we be here with it? How do we be in it? Some days I find this very challenging. And what I want to do with the rest of the program is share with you my favorite practice for this, which is to read poetry. Poetry reminds me of the power in careful attention and how it gives way to devotion and love. It reminds me of the beauty in the careful use of language, of how we are all embedded in memory, in story, and how we stay in touch with the good in ourselves and in the world. What is worthy of celebrating? When I read a series of poems, it helps me see the light in the darkness. It helps me find that honey in the moment. So I invite you to just sit back and relax and let the words wash over you. I hope that this is both an inspiration and a balm for whatever it is that you're feeling in these challenging times. And I want to start with a poem by Mary Oliver called Sunrise. You can die for it, an idea or the world. People have done so brilliantly, letting their small bodies be bound to the stake, creating an unforgettable fury of light. But this morning, climbing the familiar hills and the familiar fabric of dawn, I thought of China and India and Europe, and I thought how the sun blazes for everyone just so joyfully as it rises under the lashes of my own eyes. And I thought, I am so many. What is my name? What is the name of the deep breath I would take over and over for all of us? Call it whatever you want. It is happiness. It is another one of the ways to enter fire. That's Sunrise by Mary Oliver. The next one I want to read for you is called Wax Wings by Robert Francis. Four Tao philosophers as cedar wax wings chat on a February berry bush in sun, and I am one. Such merriment and such sobriety, the small wild fruit on the tall stalk. Was this not always my true style? Above an elegance of snow, beneath a silk blue sky, a brotherhood of four birds. Can you mistake us? To sun, to feast, and to converse, and all together. For this I have abandoned all my other lives. That was Wax Wings by Robert Francis. The Heart by Maxima Khan. Impossible organ, beating and pumping our blood river to some unknown sea. It doesn't take much, a small glitch in the inevitable rhythm, weather break, wind howl, and we are set adrift. We long for order, but the heart, with its incessant thump, 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 has its own music, its own reasons, if you can call them that. Today the sun rises gold as it always does, washes the buildings across the way with autumnal light, and as the squalling of birds mingles with the morning traffic, the heart wakes too into its own song, its own colors and weathers, the way the wind animates the leaves outside the window, the way red catches the eye. That was The Heart by Maxima Khan. The Sycamore by Wendell Berry. In the place that is my own place, whose earth I am shaped in and must bear, there is an old tree growing, a great sycamore that is a wondrous healer of itself. Fences have been tied to it, nails driven into it, hacks and whittles cut in it. The lightning has burned it. There is no year it has flourished in that has not harmed it. There is a hollow in it that is its death, though its living brims whitely at the lip of the darkness and flows outward. Over all its scars has come the seamless white of the bark. It bears the gnarls of its history healed over. It has risen to a strange perfection in the warp and bending of its long growth. It has gathered all accidents into its purpose. It has become the intention and radiance of its dark fate. It is a fact, sublime, mystical, and unassailable. In all the country, there is no other like it. I recognize in it a principle, an indwelling, the same as itself and greater, that I would be ruled by. I see that it stands in its place and feeds upon it and is fed upon and is native and maker. That's The Sycamore by Wendell Berry. Liftoff by Constance Crawford. This morning, the crows are noisy outside our still dim bedroom, a racket of warnings, gripes, and ridicule. Every crow adds to it as they wake and fly. Curled, eyes sealed, I ache from the hard old mattress. Out there, they stretch and fan the fresh dawn air. Predators, omnivores, junk food addicts, they thrive. Our local chapter of the Crow Club swells in its redwood headquarters above the football field. Just let the dainty bush tit try to raise a brood. Yet my heart wants curing from yesterday's stale quarrel. So why not let them, compromised, garrulous gorgers that they are, lift me toward today's conceivable happiness? Liftoff by Constance Crawford. A Blessing by James Wright. Just off the highway to Rochester, Minnesota, twilight bounds softly forth on the grass, and the eyes of those two Indian ponies darken with kindness. They have come gladly out of the willows to welcome my friend and me. We step over the barbed wire into the pasture, where they have been grazing all day, alone. They ripple tensely. They can hardly contain their happiness that we have come. They bow shyly as wet swans. They love each other. There is no loneliness like theirs. At home once more, they begin munching the young tufts of spring in the darkness. I would like to hold the slenderer one in my arms, for she has walked over to me and nuzzled my left hand. She is black and white. Her mane falls wild on her forehead, and the light breeze moves me to caress her long ear that is delicate as the skin over a girl's wrist. Suddenly I realize that if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom. That's A Blessing by James Wright. September Afternoon at 4 o'clock by Marge Piercy. Full in the hand, heavy with ripeness, perfume spreading its fan. Moments now resemble sweet russet pears glowing on the bough, peaches warm from the afternoon sun, amber and juicy, flesh that can make you drunk. There is a turn in things that makes the heart catch. We are ripening, all the hard green grasping, the stony will swelling into sweetness. The acid and sugar in balance, the sun stored as energy that is pleasure, and pleasure that is energy. Whatever happens, whatever, we say, and hold hard and let go and go on. In the perfect moment, the future coils, a tree inside a pit. Take, eat. We are each other's perfection. The wine of our mouths is sweet and heavy. Soon enough comes the vinegar. The fruit is ripe for the taking, and we take. There is no other wisdom. That was September Afternoon at 4 o'clock by Marge Piercy. Constellations by Philip Rosenberg. At first it appeared a random sky full of stars, scattered like a game of jacks and spilled rice. But after a while, one can see Cassiopeia when she is pointed out. True, for a time, other clusters of five stars may fool you, until an acquaintance is made, and then no other W in the galaxy can be mistaken for her. She becomes as obvious as Orion, the Big Dipper, a lover you have taken. And over time, randomness melts away, revealing Pegasus's large body sprawled across the summer sky, and all the signs of the zodiac rim the horizon, and then it's a short distance to other patterns noticed again and again, until one's attention melts the appearance of luck, and the ebb and the flow of love, and the moving into and then away from a dream lose their surprise, and soon one may notice a path and markers, and what was once a world of unconnected events takes on the appearance of order, and then another distance away, maybe short or maybe long, you notice yourself, not apart from the other stars, but a part of a constellation, recognizable and with a beauty that astounds you. Constellations by Philip Rosenberg. Making Peace by Denise Levertov. A voice from the dark called out, "The poets must give us imagination of peace to oust the intense, familiar imagination of disaster. Peace, not only the absence of war. But peace, like a poem, is not there ahead of itself, can't be imagined before it is made, can't be known except in the words of its making, grammar of justice, syntax of mutual aid. A feeling towards it, dimly sensing a rhythm, is all we have until we begin to utter its metaphors, learning them as we speak. A line of peace might appear if we restructured the sentence our lives are making, revoked its reaffirmation of profit and power, questioned our needs, allowed long pauses. A cadence of peace might balance its weight on that different fulcrum. Peace, a presence, an energy field more intense than war, might pulse then, stanza by stanza, into the world, each act of living one of its words, each word a vibration of light, facets of the forming crystal." That's Making Peace by Denise Levertov. A Blessing for the Senses by John O'Donohue. May your body be blessed. May you realize that your body is a faithful and beautiful friend of your soul. And may you be peaceful and joyful and recognize that your senses are sacred thresholds. May you realize that holiness is mindful, gazing, feeling, hearing, and touching. May your senses gather you and bring you home. May your senses always enable you to celebrate the universe and the mystery and possibilities in your presence here. May the Eros of the Earth bless you. A Blessing for the Senses by John O'Donohue. I Worried by Mary Oliver. Have to return to Mary Oliver. I could do a whole program on Mary Oliver. I worried. I worried a lot. Will the garden grow? Will the rivers flow in the right direction? Will the earth turn as it was taught? And if not, how shall I correct it? Was I right? Was I wrong? Will I be forgiven? Can I do better? Will I ever be able to sing? Even the sparrows can do it, and I am, well, hopeless. Is my eyesight fading, or am I just imagining it? Am I going to get rheumatism, lockjaw, dementia? Finally, I saw that worrying had come to nothing and gave it up and took my old body and went out into the morning and sang. Now here is a bit from This Ecstasy by John Squadra. All the things you thought were important aren't. All that matters is what you love, and what you love is who you are, and who you are is where you are, and where you are is where you will be when death takes you across the river. You can't avoid the journey, but you can wake up now and see where you've been and where you are going. Paradise is not a place where we are going. It is a place where we are from. You can go there at any time. It is our beliefs that lock us in our hell. It is the sacredness of this moment that is the key to freedom. That's from This Ecstasy by John Squadra. And now the last thing I want to share with you is a couple paragraphs from the end of a book by Terry Tempest Williams titled When Women Were Birds. She writes, "I want to feel both the beauty and the pain of the age that we are living in. I want to survive my life without becoming numb. I want to speak and comprehend words of wounding without having those words become the landscape where I dwell. I want to possess a light touch that can elevate darkness to the realm of stars." A bit later, she asks, "How shall we live?" And her answer, "Once upon a time, when women were birds, there was the simple understanding that to sing at dawn and to sing at dusk was to heal the world through joy. The birds still remember what we have forgotten, that the world is meant to be celebrated." And that's it for me, Catherine Savela, and Myth in the Mojave for this week. I'd like to send a special message out to the women who are listening. Just a reminder about the workshop that I'm offering here in Joshua Tree the weekend of November 2nd through 4th called The Female Face of the Divine. You can go to my website, mythicmojo.com, for details, and I would be so happy for any of you who listen to join the circle that we'll be gathering that weekend. If you have questions or comments about today's program, I hope you'll feel free to contact me. And if you are finding something of value in Myth in the Mojave, please join the Myth in the Mojave community on Bandcamp. For only $5 a month, you have unlimited access to all of the programs in the archives, free downloads of everything new that I create, and you will play an essential role in making future programs possible. Thank you so much for listening. Please tune in next time. And until then, happy myth making, and keep the mystery in your life alive.